over and over until persistence becomes a habit. Part 2. Self-discipline in business, sales, and finances. In this part, you will learn how to develop the discipline necessary to join the top 10% of people in your field. You'll learn how to increase your productivity, performance, output, and results. You'll learn how to become one of the most respected and esteemed people in your organization and your industry. Chapter 8. Self-discipline and work. Vince Lombardi said, "Leaders aren't born, they're made. And they're made just like anything else, through hard work. And that's the price we'll have to pay to achieve that goal or any goal." There is perhaps no area of your life where self-discipline has a greater impact on your future than in your work. Yet, if you're like most people, from the time you start in the morning and then continuing throughout the day, you're surrounded by people and events that draw you away from doing the things that are most important. However, it is through doing your most important tasks that you move onward and upward, quickly and dependably in your career. A group of senior executives was asked, "What are the most important qualities that a person would need to be promoted in your company?" Of these executives, 85% agreed that the most important qualities are 1. The ability to set priorities and work on high-value tasks, and 2. The discipline to get the job done quickly and well. It seems that these two qualities are more helpful for career success than anything else a person could do. Diligent, disciplined, focused work will enable you to get consistently and predictably more done, get paid more, and get promoted faster throughout your career than the average person. Separate the relevant from the irrelevant. I've mentioned the Pareto Principle, the 80-20 rule, several times in this book, and it applies again here. Fully 80% of the value of what you accomplish will come from 20% of the things you do. Your job, then, is to identify those top 20% of your tasks and then concentrate single-mindedly on doing them quickly and well. Chapter 13 discusses time management in detail, but for now, let's take a look at the flip side of good time management, poor time management. According to Robert Half International, the average employee wastes about 50% of his or her time on non-work-related activities. 37% of work time is wasted on idle conversation on personal subjects with coworkers, conversations that have nothing whatever to do with the job at hand. The other 13% of wasted time is consumed by coming in late or leaving early, by long lunches and coffee breaks, by surfing the internet, reading the newspaper, or conducting personal business during the day. Even worse, when people who waste a lot of time actually settle down and get to work, they spend too much time on low-value tasks and activities. As a result, they get very little done, which then causes them to feel that they are under continual pressure to get caught up. Unfortunately, when you waste time at work, your work does not go away. It continually builds like an avalanche overhang. Deadlines come closer and closer. Stress mounts up until you finally force yourself to do the job, usually at the last minute, and then you often make expensive mistakes. Develop an excellent reputation. There is nothing that will bring you to the attention of people who can help you faster than for you to develop a reputation for hard, disciplined work every hour of every day. Average employees increase their income at only about 3% per year, which is just about the rate of inflation or cost of living increases. In other words, if you're an average employee, you're not really making any more money from year to year. Rather, you're just keeping up with your expenses. But the top 20% in most fields increase their income anywhere from 10 to 25% per year, which is also compounded year after year. The top 20% of people at work earn 80% of the money. The bottom 80% of employees have no choice but to share the 20% of the money that is left over. They must scramble for the crumbs that fall off the tables of the highly productive people in their fields. You can double your income. When I say to people in my seminars that you should set a goal to double your income in the months and years ahead, people react in different ways. Often at the break, someone will come up to me and say, You don't understand my company. There's no way that I could double my income at my current company. They simply would not pay me that amount of money. Having heard this before, I then ask them the critical question. Is there anyone at your company who earns twice as much as you do? The person that I'm talking to will always agree that, yes, there are people in my company who earn two or three times as much as I do. I then make the key point. So your company is quite willing to pay some people twice as much as they pay you. They're just not willing to pay you twice as much. Why is that? Then suddenly the light goes on. The individual realizes that it is not the company that is not willing to pay the money. It is the individual who is not contributing enough to be worth that additional money. The responsibility is his, not the company's. The law of three helps you to prioritize. When we coach entrepreneurs, executives, and business owners, we take them through an exercise that is designed to help them double their productivity, performance, and output within 12 months, sometimes even within 30 days. It's simple. Here's how it works. First, make a list of all the things that you do in a week or a month from the time you start work on Monday morning through to the end of the week. Write down everything, both small and large, including checking your email and returning phone calls. Then review this list and ask this key question. If I could only do one thing on this list all day long, which one task or activity contributes the most value to my company? As you go over your list, the correct answer will probably jump out at you. Whatever it is, put a circle around it. Then ask the second question. If I could only do two things on this list all day long, which would be the second task or activity? Review your list again and identify your second most important task in terms of contribution to your company. Finally, ask the question once more. If I could only do three things on this list all day long, what would be the third item? We call this the law of three. The law of three says that there are three primary things that you do that contribute 90% or more of your value to your company or organization. Your job is to identify those three critical tasks and then discipline yourself to do them all day long. All of your other minor tasks will be support tasks, complementary tasks, enjoyable tasks, or useless tasks. They will be little things that you've gotten into the habit of doing as a way of unconsciously avoiding the big, difficult, important tasks that can make a tremendous difference in your work and career. Calculate your hourly rate. Another way for you to double your income is for you to use the hourly rate method of calculating your personal value and your time allocation. First, determine the amount that you earn each hour. You do this by dividing your annual income by the number 2,000, which is roughly the number of hours that an entrepreneur or executive works each year in our society. 40 hours a week times 50 weeks a year. For example, if you earn $50,000 a year divided by 2,000, your hourly rate would be $25. If you earn $100,000 per year divided by 2,000, your hourly rate would be $50. Whatever it is, from that moment onward, resolve to do only those things that pay you your hourly rate or better. Refuse to do those things that someone else can do at a lower hourly rate than you. Do not waste your time doing things of low value or no value while your other important tasks are building up. Get on the same page about what work is most important. Once you have made a list of all the results you feel you have been hired to accomplish, and you have determined your three most important things that you do to justify your hourly rate, take your list of key activities to your boss and have your boss organize your job based on his or her priorities. You need to do this because you must be sure. Benjamin Trigo, co-founder of the Kepner Trigo consulting firm and author of The Rational Manager, once said, "The very worst use of time is to do very well what need not be done at all." Yet it is amazing how many people are working hard on tasks that are of little or no value to their bosses. No matter how well you do an unimportant task, it doesn't help you. Even worse, working on low-value tasks keep you from working on the most important things you could be doing. Hard work on the wrong job can actually sabotage your career. The happiest days you will have at work will be when you are working on those tasks that your boss considers to be the most important. The unhappiest days at work will be when you and your boss are at cross purposes and not getting along primarily because you are not completing the jobs that are most important to him and to his career. Your goal is to be paid more and promoted faster. Your goal is to become one of the most valuable and highest paid people in your field. Your job is first to make yourself valuable and then to make yourself indispensable to your company. This requires first and foremost that you are always working on those tasks your boss considers most important. Work all the time you work. The key to doubling your productivity and output and eventually your income is to really work all the time you're at work. Simply put, when you work, work. Don't waste time. Don't delay. Don't chat with coworkers or sit around drinking coffee. Don't read the newspaper or surf the internet. When you come into work in the morning, put your head down and then work all day long. The biggest time wasters in the world of work are other people who want to talk with you, distract you, delay you, and take up the time that you should be spending on high-value tasks. When a time waster approaches you and says, "Do you have a minute to talk?" you reply by saying, "Yes, but not now. Why don't we talk at lunchtime or after work? In the meantime, I have to get this job finished. I have to get back to work." When you tell people that you are under the gun, that you have to get a task finished for your boss, they will usually leave you alone. If you do this often enough, they will develop the habit of leaving you alone and instead find someone else with whom to waste time. Keep yourself motivated and focused by talking to yourself in a positive way. Your mantra from now on should be, "Back to work, back to work, back to work." Whenever you find yourself slowing down on a major task, begin repeating to yourself those magic words, "Back to work." Who works hardest? The secret survey. Imagine that an outside company is going to do a study of all the people who work in your organization. They're going to give each person a list of all the employees and ask them to rate their fellow employees in terms of who works the hardest, the second hardest, and so on. They're then going to give this list of people, organized from the hardest worker down to the laziest, to your superiors. This list is going to be used to determine who gets paid more and promoted faster than others. Now, imagine that this survey is already being taken, but in secret. The fact is, in any organization, everyone knows who works harder than anyone else. Everyone knows who works less and who does not pull their weight. Everyone knows. It's not a secret at all. Resolve today that if a survey like this were to be taken 1 year from today, you would win the contest. Resolve today that you are going to develop the reputation for being the hardest working person in your business. This will do more to help you than almost anything else. When you are surrounded by time-wasting people in situations, it takes tremendous self-discipline to work all the time you're at work. You must constantly fight against distractions and interruptions so that you can get back to work. The success formula. When I began my career working for a large company, I was the low man on the totem pole. Everyone had been there longer than me and was ahead of me in the company pecking order. Even though I was in my early 30s, I still had no idea how to play the game or what to do to get ahead in the cutthroat corporate competition that existed. Somewhat by accident, I stumbled onto the formula that made me successful. It was very simple. Whenever my boss gave me something to do, I did it immediately. Like a dog chasing after a thrown stick, I would immediately throw myself at the task, complete it, and hurry back to my boss with the finished job. Initially, he would smile and say something like, "I didn't really need it done that quickly, but thank you for getting it done." When I was caught up with my work, instead of relaxing, I would go to my boss and say, "I'm all caught up. I want more work to do. I want more responsibility." These words became my mantra. I want more responsibility. Again, my boss, who was preoccupied with an enormous number of projects, would say something like, "Okay, leave it with me. I'll think about what else I can give you to do." Every day, like a broken record, I would go to my boss at the end of the day and say, "I'm all caught up. I would like more responsibility." Bit by bit, he began to toss me sticks. He would give me a little task to do to keep me busy. Whatever it was, I would go out immediately, complete the task, and bring in the results. I would then say, "I'm all caught up. I want more responsibility." Within 6 months, he began to see me as the go-to guy. Whenever he had something he needed done quickly, he passed by everyone else and gave it to me. He knew that whatever he asked me to do, I would do it quickly. Once, my boss asked me to fly to Reno to begin development work on a property that the company was purchasing. He told me I could go sometime in the next couple of weeks. Instead, I left the next morning. I went straight to the lawyer who was handling the transaction, and then to the engineer who was in charge of the development work. I immediately sensed that something was seriously wrong with this land purchase. I didn't know what it was, but as I went from person to person, asking questions and gathering information. By the end of the day, just a few hours before this $2 million transaction was set to close, and the money would change hands forever, I found that we were about to be sold a piece of land that had no water and was therefore undevelopable. Because of complex laws and limited riparian rights, water rights, the property was a worthless piece of ground that could not be developed within the next 100 years. If we had proceeded with the purchase, we would have lost $2 million. I immediately stopped the transaction, demanded that the lawyer cut me a certified check for the $250,000 deposit that was in his trust account, and flew home to my boss to tell him the story. As you can imagine, my boss was very happy with what I had done. From that day forward, I received more and more responsibilities. Within another year, I was running 3 divisions of the company and had a staff of 42 people in 3 cities. I later learned that my boss paid me more money than anyone else who ever worked for him, and he did so all on the basis of results and profitability. This is why whenever people ask me how to succeed in business by really trying, I give them the same advice. Whatever your boss gives you to do, do it quickly and well. Then go and ask for more responsibility. And when you get it, do the job quickly and well until you get a reputation for being the person who does things fast. This will help you advance in your career more than any other reputation you could develop. Pay the price. Here is a simple 3-part formula for success at work. Come in a little earlier, work a little harder, and stay a little later. This will move you so far ahead of your competitors that they will never catch up. Come in to work 1 hour earlier, before anyone else arrives. Use that time to plan and organize your day, and get started on your most important tasks. Make sure that whatever time your boss comes to work, you are always there working before he arrives. Second, work a little harder. Don't waste time. Don't chat with coworkers. Work through lunchtime so that you can get on top and stay on top of your main tasks and responsibilities. Third, work 1 hour later than your coworkers. If they leave at 5 o'clock, you leave at 6. Use that extra time to complete your important tasks and get yourself organized for the following day. When you come in 1 hour earlier, work through lunch, and work 1 hour later, you add 3 full productive hours to your day. Because there are no interruptions when you work during these time periods, you'll actually accomplish 2 or 3 times as much as you would during your other work hours when you're constantly interrupted by other people and telephone calls. In fact, you can double or even triple your productivity, performance, and output by simply adding these 3 hours to your work day. The good news is that by coming in earlier and leaving later, you don't lose anything. You merely avoid the traffic tie-ups and slowdowns that most people suffer through on their ways to and from work. The 40-plus formula. To succeed faster at work, use the 40-plus formula. This formula says that you can tell where you're going to be 5 years from now by looking at the number of hours that you put in today in excess of 40 hours per week. If all you do is put in the regular 40 hours that everyone else puts in, all you will do is survive. Your annual increases will be 3 or 4%. You will have a job, but your income increases will go up at the same rate as everyone else. It is when you begin to put in more than 40 hours that you give yourself an advantage over most of the other people in your company and your business. Make it a habit to do more than what you are paid for. Discipline yourself to put in more than you take out. Every hour that you work over 40 hours a week is an investment in your future success. The highest paid people in America in every field work 50 to 60 hours per week. The average self-made millionaire works 59 hours per week. This is equal to 5 12-hour days or 6 10-hour days. Most successful people at the beginning of their careers worked 6 days a week, sometimes 7. Moreover, they worked all the time they were at work. They didn't waste time. They realized that in order to reap a great harvest later in their career, they had to sow a lot of seeds in the springtime of their career. Look the part. Dress for success. Finally, to succeed at work, you need to discipline yourself to look the part. Remember, birds of a feather flock together. When it comes to presentation, this means that people like to promote others who look like them. Your bosses are very sensitive to the appearance of their staff. They like to promote people who they are proud to introduce to their friends and colleagues. Be sure that you dress and groom in such a way that your boss would be proud to take you out for lunch and introduce you to others as a representative of his or her company. Each morning before you go to work, look in the mirror and ask yourself, "Do I look like one of the top people in my field?" If you don't, go back and change, and keep changing until you look like one of the top people in your business. Learn how to dress for success. Read books and articles, or ask others for advice. Look at the most successful people in your business and dress the way they do. Dress for the job two levels above your current job. Remember that fully 95% of the first impression you make on other people will be determined by your dress and grooming. Make sure that that first impression and then the second and third impressions are consistent with the message you want to send. Many people work their entire lives without realizing that by putting forward a little extra effort, working a little harder, and focusing on higher value tasks, they could become one of the most valuable people in their organizations. When you discipline yourself to continually increase the value of your contribution to your company, you'll put your career on the fast track and virtually guarantee yourself a wonderful future. In the next chapter, you will learn that your work behaviors naturally determine your ascension to leadership, and you will see how self-discipline is essential to fulfilling your potential as a leader. Now here are some action exercises for you. Number one, make a decision today that you're going to become one of the top 20% of people in your company and your industry. What should you or could you do differently to achieve that goal? Two, make a list of everything you do in your job and then identify the three things that contribute the greatest value to your work and your company. Three, set a new work schedule for yourself and begin to start earlier, work harder, and stay later until it becomes a habit. 4. Identify the most important results you're expected to achieve in your job and then work on those results all day long. 5. Determine the person who is the best dressed and groomed in your company and then resolve to use him or her as a role model for your own appearance. 6. Decide today that from now on you are going to actually work all the time you're at work, and that you are going to develop the reputation for being the hardest working person in your company. And 7, develop a sense of urgency. Resolve to move fast when you're given a job or opportunity. This can change your life. Chapter 9, Self-Discipline and Leadership. Nothing is more harmful to the service than the neglect of discipline, for it is discipline more than numbers that gives one army superiority over another. George Washington. Leadership and self-discipline go hand in hand. It is not possible to imagine an effective leader who lacks self-discipline, willpower, self-control, and self-mastery. The overarching characteristic of a leader is that he is in complete control of himself and every situation. There has seldom been a time in history when leaders were so needed and so much in demand as today. We need leaders at every level of society, both in the profit and non-profit sectors. We need leaders in our families, businesses, places of worship, community organizations, and especially politics. We need men and women who take their responsibilities seriously and are willing to step forward to take command of the situation. Fortunately, leadership is learnable. Leaders are developed, usually self-developed, over time through hard work, experience, and training. As Peter Drucker once said, "There may be natural-born leaders, but there are so few of them that they make no difference in the great scheme of things." 4 stages of development. In your career in business, you progress through 4 levels of activity and attainment. First, you start off as an employee with limited knowledge and experience. Then, as you grow, learn, and develop the ability to get results, you evolve upward and become a supervisor with responsibility for the performance and results of other people. As you continue to move up the scale of supervision, improving your ability to get things done through others from directly overseeing the work of employees, you become a manager, someone who assigns work to people with demonstrated competence in certain areas. Managers have a larger view, and this comes with greater responsibilities. As you move up the scale of management, becoming more knowledgeable and effective and getting more and better results from more and different people, you reach the highest level, that of a leader. At this stage, you are responsible for determining what is to be done rather than how it is to be done. It is said that some leaders are made, some are born, and some people have leadership thrust upon them. Leaders emerge or are promoted to deal with a situation requiring leadership ability. In its simplest terms, the role of the leader is to take responsibility for results. The primary reason that people are promoted into increasingly higher levels of leadership is because they demonstrate the ability to get the required results at each level. The ongoing question of the leader is always, what results are expected of me? Clarity is essential. The main reason that some people are not promoted into greater leadership positions, or perhaps they are even fired, is because of failure to execute. They do not do the most important jobs expected of them, nor do they get the results demanded of them. Leaders have vision. The first quality of leadership, based on 3,300 studies of leaders reviewed by James McPherson, is the quality of vision. Leaders have vision. They have the ability to project forward into the future and develop a clear picture of where they want their organizations to go. They then have the ability to share this vision with others and gain others' commitment to make this vision a reality. You become a leader when you accept responsibility for results. You become a leader when you begin to think, act, and talk like a leader. You become a leader when you develop a vision for yourself and for your company, your life, or your area of responsibility. There are hundreds of books written about leadership and the importance of vision, yet they can be boiled down to a single principle. A military leader has a vision of victory from which he never deviates. A business leader has a vision of success for the business based on excellent performance to which he or she is completely committed. A leader is a standard bearer. The leader sets the standard for the organization or the department. It is not possible for anyone in the organization to have a clearer vision or to aspire to a higher standard of excellence than the leader. For this reason, the leader is the role model, the one who sets the tone and the morale for everyone in the organization. The personality and influence of the leader affects everyone below him in the company, organization, or department. You cannot raise morale in a business. It filters down from the top, from the leader. The behavior of the leader influences and affects the behavior of everyone else. If the leader is positive, confident, and upbeat, everyone in the organization will be influenced by his behavior and will be more confident, positive, and upbeat as well. Walk the talk. When you become a leader, you must discipline yourself to be leader-like. You must walk, talk, and act the part of a leader. You become a different person with different responsibilities than a manager. When you are working your way up, you are a part of the staff or the sales team. When you become a manager, you are part of management. This means that when you are part of the staff, your orientation is upward and sideways. But when you become a leader, your orientation is downward, toward all the people for whom you are responsible. Perhaps the most important behavior of a leader is for you to discipline yourself to be a role model. Imagine that everyone is watching you and patterning everything they do and say based on your behavior. When you become a leader, you no longer have the luxury to let it all hang out. From the time you are promoted into leadership, you have a special responsibility to discipline and control your words and behaviors in such a way so that you bring about the very best possible results for your organization and for other people. Set the standards. The leader sets the standards for the organization's behavior, quality of work, personal organization, time management, and appearance. In excellent organizations, the leader is the person who everyone looks up to and wants to emulate. In most cases, the leader works harder than others in the company. The leader appears to be more committed, more determined, more courageous, more visionary, and more persistent than anyone else. The leader sets a tone that everyone wants to emulate. The leader also sets the standard for how people are treated in the organization. When the leader treats people with courtesy, consideration, and concern, it quickly becomes known that these are the standards to which others must adhere. Set values and principles. In addition to a clear vision for the organization, the leader must have a set of values and organizing principles that guide behavior and decision-making. Everyone must know what the leader and the company stands for and believes in. The job of the leader, then, is to articulate this vision of excellent performance within the constraints of high ethical standards at all times. He or she must walk the talk and live the values and behaviors he or she teaches. The very best standard for a leader is the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. For example, when Jack Welch was the president of General Electric, he encouraged managers to treat each employee as if that employee might be promoted over his head sometime in the future, and he might find himself working under the person who is now working below him. This way of thinking assured that managers treated their staff with a high degree of respect and courtesy. 7 Principles of Leadership. To be an effective leader, there are 7 principles you must incorporate into your leadership behavior and activities. 1. Clarity. This is perhaps your most important responsibility. You must be absolutely clear about who you are and what you stand for. You must be absolutely clear about your vision and where you want to lead your people. You must be absolutely clear about the goals and objectives of the organization and how they are to be achieved. Especially, you must be absolutely clear about the values, mission, and purpose of the organization and what it stands for. Everyone around you and below you must know exactly why they are doing what they do and what their company has been formed to accomplish. 2. Competence. As the leader, you must set a standard of excellent performance for the organization as well as for every person and function in the company. Your goal must be for your company to be as good or better than your very best competitor. You must be continually seeking ways to improve the quality of your product and services to your customers. 3. Commitment. The leader is absolutely committed to the success of the organization and believes completely that this organization is the best in the business or will be the best in the future. This passionate commitment to the organization and to success and achievement motivates and inspires people to do their best work and put their whole hearts into their jobs. 4. Constraints. The job of the leader is to identify the constraints or limiting factors that set the speed at which the company achieves its most important goals of revenue and profitability. The leader then allocates people and resources to alleviate those constraints and remove the obstacles so it can perform as one of the best in the business. 5. Creativity. The leader is open to new ideas of all kinds and from all sources. The leader is continually encouraging people to find faster, better, cheaper, and easier ways to produce excellent products and services and to take better care of customers. 5. Continuous learning. The leader is personally committed to reading, listening, and upgrading his or her personal knowledge and skills as an executive. The leader should attend additional seminars and courses to improve his or her skills and abilities. At the same time, the leader encourages everyone in the organization to learn and grow as a normal and natural part of business life. The leader provides time and resources for training and development. The leader knows that the best companies have the best trained people, the second best companies have the second best trained people, and the third best companies have the least trained people and are on their way out of business. 7 is consistency. The leader has the self-discipline to be consistent, dependable, reliable, calm, and predictable in all situations. One of the great comforts of business life is for an employee to know that the leader is completely consistent and reliable. An effective leader does not change from day to day. The leader is not blown in the wind by each new situation or problem or emergency that arises. Instead, the leader is calm, positive, and confident, especially under pressure. The inevitable crisis. The only thing that is inevitable in the life of the leader is the crisis. When you rise to a position of leadership, you will experience crises repeatedly, crises that are unpredictable, unbidden, and often capable of seriously damaging the organization. It is in the crisis that the leader demonstrates his competence. In times of crisis, the leader becomes calm, cool, objective, and completely in control. The leader asks questions and gathers information. The leader assesses the situation accurately and makes whatever decisions are necessary to minimize the damage or cut the losses. Great leaders discipline themselves to keep their fears and misgivings private. They do not share their concerns with their staffs, knowing that this can cause confusion and loss of morale. Instead, the leader asks a lot of questions, probes deeply into situations so that he or she understands them thoroughly, and keeps his or her feelings private. As far as the members of the organization are concerned, the leader is always calm, positive, relaxed, and in complete control, no matter what is happening. Self-control and leadership. There's a direct relationship between your ability to discipline yourself and your behaviors and your readiness to lead. It is only when you prove to others that you are in complete control of yourself that they develop the confidence to put you in a leadership position and keep you there. The leader realizes that everything he says to or about another person is magnified. The leader therefore praises and encourages people, both in their presence and when they are not around. He never says anything negative that could be misinterpreted or that could demotivate or offend another person. If he has problems with someone, he addresses them privately, out of sight and earshot of anyone else. Leadership qualities. Leaders discipline themselves to plan, prepare, organize, and check every detail. They take nothing for granted. They ask questions to ensure that they have a complete understanding of a situation, problem, or difficulty. Great leaders act as if they own the entire company. They accept a high level of personal responsibility. The leader never complains, makes excuses, or blames others for problems. Leaders are intensely action-oriented. They gather information carefully and they make the decisions that are necessary. They set measures and standards and hold others to them. They insist that the job be done quickly and well. Leaders rise to the top. Leaders rise to the top of an organization as cream rises in milk. When you accept complete responsibility for getting results, concentrate single-mindedly on completing your most important tasks, continually upgrade your knowledge and skills as well as your ability to contribute value to your company, and treat other people with kindness and consideration, you will emerge as a natural leader. As you demonstrate your ability to make an increasingly valuable contribution to your organization, people above, below, and on both sides of you will want you to be promoted into leadership and will support you when you reach that position. One of your primary aims in life is to walk, talk, act, speak, and treat others as a leader would. Eventually, your position will be equal to your performance. In the next chapter, you will learn how to develop and practice the disciplines necessary to be more successful in your business life and activities. Now here are 7 action exercises that come from this chapter. 1. Ask yourself, what results are expected of me? And then, concentrate single-mindedly on getting those results every day. 2. See yourself as the leader of your organization and ask yourself, what kind of a company would this company be if everyone in it were just like me? 3. Create a clear, exciting vision for yourself and your organization based on success and excellent performance. 4. Identify the most important people in your business world and determine how you will have to behave toward them to get them to perform at their best. 5. Resolve in advance that when the inevitable crisis occurs, you will respond in a calm, controlled, and intelligent manner. 6. Clarify the exact values and principles you believe in and stand for, and then share them with the people around you. And number 7, treat each person around you as if they are competent, valuable, and important. This is the key to gaining the loyalty and commitment that you require as a leader. Chapter 10, Self-Discipline and Business. John Viney wrote, "The quality of self-denial in the pursuit of a longer-term goal, and indeed, the willpower to maintain that level of self-denial, is an excellent training for the boardroom." Most people will work in or for a business or own a business in the course of their lifetimes. The achievement of business success demands high levels of discipline from you in every area of business activity, both large or small. Without self-discipline and self-control in business, no success is possible. There's no area of activity that demands more self-discipline than starting and operating a successful business in our current economy. The first law of economics is scarcity. As a rule, there is never enough of anything for everyone who wants it. Specifically, there are never enough customers for you to sell everything you want to sell. There are never enough sales revenues to help you achieve all your financial goals. There are never sufficient profits to enable you to expand as much as you want. Especially, there are never enough good people to work with and for you to help you achieve your business goals. The law of competition. If the first law of economics is scarcity, then the first law of business is competition. It requires tremendous focus and discipline to do the things necessary to attract the scarce money of customers toward purchasing your product or service. To not only survive but also thrive, you must compete continually against all other uses of the same amount of money that you want to charge for what you sell. The first discipline of business success is that you offer a product or service that people want, need, and will pay for at a price they will accept, a price that is competitive with every other business that wants the same customer dollar. You must be completely honest with your product-service mix to ensure that it is well-suited to the current market. This is an area where false assumptions or incorrect conclusions can lead to business failure. This answer is continually changing as competition and customer tastes also change. The customer is always right. Every week I speak to business people who are unhappy with their levels of sales and profitability. They insist that their product or service is excellent and that people should be buying from them in a much larger quantity. In each case, I have to gently point out to them that the only proof that their product or service is truly attractive or valuable is that people buy it willingly and then buy it again and tell their friends to buy it as well. According to the experts, fully 70% of your business decisions will turn out to be wrong in the fullness of time. This is the average. When you're a new business person or starting a new business, you'll be wrong even more often than this. It's not unusual for an entrepreneur to be wrong 90% of the time in the beginning of his or her career. It requires tremendous self-discipline and character to face the possibility that you could be wrong in your most cherished assumptions and beliefs. Nonetheless, this discipline is essential if you're going to minimize your mistakes, cut your losses, and redirect your resources toward offering customers more of the things that they really want, need, and are willing to pay for. All business investment and business startups require a high level of optimism. You must believe in the future possibilities of your business along with your new products and services. You must have so much confidence in their marketability that you're willing to undertake financial risk and invest many hours, weeks, and even years to achieve your business goals, and you must do all of this with no real guarantee of success. At the same time, you need discipline to curb your confidence, to remain objective and realistic. Overconfidence in business can lead to business mistakes, financial losses, and even bankruptcy. You must be better. Because of the aggressive and determined nature of your competition, in order to simply survive, you must discipline yourself to be equal to or better than your competitors. After all, your competitors get out of bed every morning thinking about how they can put you out of business. They want to take away your customers and your sales. They want to get your profits. They want as much of your business as they can possibly get. To increase your probabilities of success against such competition, you must make every effort to outthink them. When you start a business or a new venture within a business, you require the discipline to do your homework thoroughly in advance you create a complete business plan before you start operations, and you continue to update it and revise it every year thereafter. The discipline of advanced planning can spell the difference between success and failure. Challenge your assumptions. Most business ideas do not work, at least in their original form. As Peter Drucker said, errant assumptions lie at the root of every failure. A major reason for business failure is that the business owner or executive relies on assumptions that are not tested. They assume that the product or service is excellent in comparison with others. They assume that they can sell a sufficient number of those products or services and do so at a profit. They further assume that those profits will be substantial enough to make this investment of time and money more attractive than any other use of the same amount of time or funds. All of these assumptions must be tested carefully before any irrevocable commitment is made. According to the Kauffman Foundation on Entrepreneurship, 95% of entrepreneurs and small business owners in America earn less than $50,000 per year. Why is this? It's not because they lack the energy, intelligence, or ability to earn more. The very fact that a person has the courage and resourcefulness to start a new business means that he or she has above average levels of natural talent. The reason why so many entrepreneurs underachieve and fail is because they lack discipline. They lack the discipline to carefully study every aspect of the business before committing to it. They lack the discipline to test their assumptions rather than jumping to conclusions and hoping for the best. Don't let this happen to you. Identify your ideal customer. You need discipline to identify and determine your ideal customer, the exact person who can and will buy your product or service in sufficient quantities and at the price you need to charge in order to justify going into this area of business in the first place. You need the discipline, based on trial, error, and persistence, to develop a marketing plan that generates a steady and predictable stream of new leads for your business. To market effectively, you must be clear about your competitive advantage and your unique selling proposition. What is it about your product or service that makes it superior and more valuable for a customer than any other similar product or service being offered today? You need the discipline to develop a complete sales system from beginning to end that converts qualified leads into solid customers. It's amazing how many businesses just assume that the product or service will sell itself, whether they have a superior sales system or not. Know your true costs. You need the discipline to determine accurate costs and the proper pricing of your products and services. Walmart has become the biggest retailer in history, largely because of its expertise in this area. It's amazing how many businesses are selling products and services at a loss because they've never accurately totaled all the costs of bringing that product or service to market in the first place. You've heard the old saying, we lose money on every item we sell, but we try to make it up on the volume. Obviously, that's not possible. You need a quality control system in order to ensure that every product or service that you sell is of such high quality that your customers are so satisfied that they happily buy from you again and tell their friends. You need the discipline to develop a customer service policy, one in which you treat your customers so well that they become loyal to you and choose you over any of your competitors. The purpose of a business is to please your customers. What is the purpose of a business? The purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer in a cost-effective manner. Profits are not the purpose of a business. Profits are the result of creating and keeping a sufficient number of customers who yield a sufficient number of profits after all cost. What is the key measure of business success? The answer is customer satisfaction. Every effort and activity of your business must be aimed at satisfying customers in a manner that is better than any other competitor. What is the measure of customer satisfaction? The answer is repeat business. It is only when customers buy from you again that you demonstrate that you have fulfilled the promise you made to them when you got them to purchase the first time. A resale to a satisfied customer requires 1/10 of the time and expense as a sale to a brand new customer. All successful businesses rely on repeat business, which is only possible with high levels of customer satisfaction. This is a real discipline. What is the key to long-term profitability? The answer is recommendations and referrals. The ultimate question that determines the long-term success or failure of your business is, based on your experience with us, would you recommend us to others? You can only survive and thrive when the majority of your customers are so happy with your products and services that they will encourage their friends and associates to buy from you as well. Since a referral from a satisfied customer is 15 times easier to sell to than a cold call, which means it only costs 1/15 as much, referral business is the key to your future. You require tremendous focus and discipline to develop and maintain customer service policies that cause people to buy from you, then buy again, and recommend you to their friends. Set high standards. You require the discipline to set standards of excellent performance in every area of your business and then to continually strive to get even better. You need to practice the KNI formula, which stands for Continuous and Never-Ending Improvement. No matter how high your level of quality is today, you can never be satisfied. You must be continually raising the bar on yourself and on everyone within your area of responsibility. You require the self-discipline to work long, hard hours for many months and even years to get to the top of your business. The average entrepreneur, business owner, or self-made millionaire in America works 59 hours per week. Some entrepreneurs even work 70 to 80 hours per week in the first few years of building their businesses. You must be prepared to discipline yourself to put in this amount of time and level of hard work if you want to be the best and get to the top of your field. Think about the solution. To succeed in business, you need the self-discipline to be proactive rather than reactive. You need to focus on solutions rather than problems. You need to concentrate on the most important thing you could possibly be doing every hour of every day rather than getting sidetracked by low-value or no-value tasks and activities. Above all, you need the self-discipline to settle in for the long term, to develop a long-time perspective in your business life. Because of the intensity of competition, it takes many years of disciplined effort for you to become a business success, whether this is in your own business or working for someone else. There are no shortcuts. There are no easy ways to get to the top. There is only one way, and that is through hard work, discipline, and willpower. On average, it takes about 2 years to break even in a new business venture. It takes another 2 years of positive cash flow to pay back the money you borrowed in the first 2 years. It then takes another 3 years before you become truly successful. In addition, everything costs twice as much and takes three times as long. Based on these statistics, why should you start your own business or embark on a new business venture? Because the time is going to pass anyway. After all, 5 years from now, you will be 5 years older. And 10 years from now, you will be 10 years older. At the end of that time, you will either be at the top of your field or still down among the 80% struggling for every dollar and worrying about money every day. The choice is yours. Discipline is the key. In the next chapter, you learn the discipline that controls the lifeblood of your business, sales. In the final analysis, as Peter Drucker said, the purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer. Now, here are some action exercises for you. Number one, stand back and look at every area of your business as if you were an outside consultant. What changes would you recommend? Two, imagine you were starting your business over again today. Are there any products or services that you would not bring to the current market? Three, identify the 20% of your products and services that account for 80% of your sales and profits. How could you sell more of them? Four, project forward 1, 2, and 5 years in your business. What are the trends? What will your customers be buying in the future? 5. List 3 ways you could improve your customer service to ensure that customers buy from you again and tell their friends. 6. List 3 ways that you could attract more and better qualified leads from your marketing and advertising activities. And 7. List 3 ways that you could make more sales to the prospects you attract, or that you could attract more and better prospects. Chapter 11. Self-Discipline and Sales. Nothing happens until a sale takes place. Red Motley. The most important element in business success is selling. Nothing happens until a sale takes place. All the factories, businesses, offices, and producers of goods and services only leap into action when someone somewhere makes a sale to someone. Selling is one of the hardest professions in America. It is also the only profession in which a person can start with limited skills to achieve one of the highest incomes in our economy. Moving onward and upward in sales is like driving on the Autobahn in Germany. There are no speed limits. You can go as far and as fast as you want by stepping on the accelerator of your own ambition and determination to excel in the profession of sales. Business success or failure. Thousands of bankrupt or insolvent companies have been analyzed over the years to determine why they failed. After all the data was sorted and studied, virtually every business failure came down to one reason: low sales. In contrast, whenever a business was succeeding, growing, yielding profitability, increasing its share prices, and offering opportunity for more and more people, the reason boiled down to one factor: high sales. Everything else was secondary. Almost everything you do in a business either increases or decreases sales. Everything either helps or hurts. Everything either attracts or keeps more customers or drives them away. Everything counts when it comes to sales. The discipline of generating sales. Whether you are a salesperson or a business owner, you require the self-discipline to focus and concentrate on generating sales every hour of every business day. A group of researchers interviewed several hundred senior executives and business owners and asked them, "How important is sales and marketing to your business?" Without exception, they all replied, "Sales and marketing is absolutely essential to our survival and growth." The researchers then conducted a time and motion study of these same business owners and executives, following them around and tracking their time usage over the course of a month. At the end of that time, they completed their calculations and determined that the average business owner or executive, who professed that sales were absolutely essential to survival and growth, was spending only 11% of his time on sales and marketing. The remaining time was spent on meetings, discussions, paperwork, administrative work, luncheons, and a variety of other activities that contributed nothing to sales generation. If you're a sales manager or business owner, you must discipline yourself to focus most of your time and attention on getting your salespeople to generate the sales on which your company depends. You must spend 75% of your time working with your salespeople and accompanying them when they visit your customers and make presentations and sales. Do your paperwork before or after work, but during working hours, when customers are available to be seen, you should dedicate yourself entirely to sales generation. How to go broke. Some years ago, I started a new business. I developed the product and then began advertising via direct mail, radio, television, and newspaper. I allowed myself to be completely overwhelmed with planning, paperwork, and advertising activities. By the end of the year, I was out of money and my business was almost broke. At that time, I realized that I had taken my eye off the ball of sales. I then sat down over Christmas and designed a complete sales process. On January 2nd, I picked up the telephone and began making appointments. Over the next 2 months of aggressive and focused sales activity, I did more business than I had done over the entire previous year. I saved my business and my home, and I never lost sight of that focus again.